Thank you, Susan, and thanks to you and Tom and Wayne for organizing this session. It's quite an honor to be here to talk about soils and pay our respects to Professor Allen. The slide on the right, those of you of a certain age will recognize everybody in the slide. Others will not. BL, of course, and Lee Guile, and who's that? Guy Smith, God himself. He was on the Tech campus in, I think it was about 81, when he took soil taxonomy on a road show somewhere in there. I managed to get this great photograph. I guess I'm the first of the students to talk today. I first met, BL, I went to Texas Tech as an archaeologist. I studied anthropology at the University of Texas and worked, worked as an archaeologist for UT, and got involved in the Lubbock Lake archaeological research in the early 70s, and then got an opportunity to study at Tech. The project at Lubbock Lake was run by the museum, and I entered the museum science program as a graduate student. And I already knew, though, as an archaeologist, that I had this vague realization that geology in general and soils in particular had some relevance in archaeology, but I wasn't really quite sure how that worked. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people in those days didn't. And I took advantage of being a student there and started taking soils courses from BL and geology courses from Tex Reeves, and got to know John Hawley and Lee Guile. They were just about to leave Lubbock when I arrived there. In any case, it's been an amazing relationship with all these gentlemen. Dr. Allen in particular encouraged my interest in soils, and by the time I finished up at Texas Tech, I realized I wanted to learn more about soils, but from a geologic standpoint, from a geomorphic stratigraphic perspective, and he encouraged me to pursue that, and I went to the University of Colorado for a PhD in geology with Pete Berkland, and that's Pete and BL and then Bud Burke, another one of Pete's students, looking at the big stratigraphic section at Lubbock Lake. You don't have to know anything about soils or geology to realize that soils and geology have got to be telling us a story out there. This thing is loaded with archaeology spanning the last 13,000 years. So I spent a good part of my career looking at, working on archaeological questions from a geologic perspective, but with an emphasis on soils. And this is a couple of the few photographs I could turn up of Dr. Allen in the field where you could see him. Like most earth scientists, and when you're in the field, all you see is their backs because they have their nose up against the profile. But I did manage to turn up a few. And I should also mention that Pete Berkland at Colorado helped me turn up a few of these slides. Now, I went on to the University of Wisconsin and spent 17 years there, but did most of my work on the High Plains, and so I continued my relationship with BL. But I have since moved to Arizona, and I spend more of my time in working in the Southwest, and that's what I want to talk about for a little bit, is my work in the Southwest. But we can't forget both BL and John. My advisor, Pete Berkland, was the one who captioned these photographs, BL and BS. But that's a tribute, a friendly tribute to John. I know he's heard that quote before. But I do want to acknowledge John's encouragement in my research over the years as well. Okay, we're going to do a little tour here through some areas familiar to a lot of you, starting in central New Mexico and work our way down the Rio Grande Valley and end up in northern Mexico. All of these areas, of course, near and dear to BL's heart. I want to talk a little bit about some research I've been involved in since I moved to Arizona. Most of my efforts in the last 9 years have been focused on understanding the peopling of the New World, in particular, the earliest occupation of the southwestern U.S. by the predecessors of modern Native American tribes. So I'll be giving you a little bit of an archaeology lesson here as we go along. But my particular approach is using geology in general and soils when appropriate to understand the environmental conditions and the landscapes of the peopling of the New World. And I want to just talk very briefly about how soils are informing us about that story. So we're going to start in the Albuquerque Basin in Les McFadden's backyard. We're on the West Mesa of the Albuquerque Basin, which is an old alluvial terrace, but also covered by volcanic sediment. You can see the volcanic peaks right here in the foreground, and then the sandias in the distance. And this surface, the West Mesa, which is quite extensive, is covered with archaeological material from the earliest occupants of the area. In the slides here, I'm showing you some artifacts, so-called Folsom artifacts, that date in the 12,000 to 13,000 year range. And Folsom people in particular made extensive use of this landscape. And one of the relationships that's been known for a long time is there's some small depressions on the West Mesa surface that act for all the world like the playas that are so common on the high plains we saw in John's slides. And so people were making use of these playas, these little wetland resources, but also occupying the surface, the rest of the surface of the West Mesa. And we've spent quite a bit of time there with Bruce Huckle from the University of New Mexico, and also with Les, looking at the soils and stratigraphy. And one of the relationships that's turned up over and over and over is most of that surface has a very well expressed soil. You usually have a mantle of sand here and there, Holocene sand, but normally what you see when you dig below the surface and you're away from the little playas is a well-expressed B horizon, BTK, BK horizonation. And we have a few dates from optically stimulated luminescence dating on the underlying sands that give us an age in the mid-20,000s. Okay, and then usually there's some older soils below that. And what apparently has been happening is that over the last few tens of thousands of years, sand sheets have covered that surface and then stabilized, and you get soils formed on them. Well, the last major cycle of sand sheet sedimentation was more or less full glacial times, and then the landscape stabilized and you form these soils. And the Paleo-Indian, the early human occupation, is on this old red soil when you're away from the playas. Here I'm calling it the Folsom surface. So people are taking advantage of the stability and are living on those landscape, that old stable landscape, and taking advantage of the adjacent playas. And so we recognize this relationship, and so these soils are telling us where the landscapes were stable. The downside to that is that you have no archaeological stratigraphy. The archaeology is right on the surface. But now we know why the archaeology is right on the surface, because except for a little bit of Holocene sedimentation, there hasn't been a means of covering the artifacts. And it's explained to us why there's so much of this material exposed on the surface throughout the West Mesa. Okay, we'll move south to the Jornada del Muerto near Socorro, another one of the structural basins in the area. Here's the Rio Grande, here's Socorro. I'm going to talk for a second about the Mockingbird Gap site. It's along this drainage called Chupadera Draw, which apparently once flowed south into what people call Paleo Lake Trinity, one of the Paleo Lake basins that scattered across the area. Named Paleo Lake Trinity, named for the Trinity site where the first atomic bomb was set off. I couldn't resist using this. I'm not much with PowerPoint, but I was very proud the day I figured out how to do that. That's on the White Sands Missile Range. So this is actually not that much of a different slide from the last one I showed you, but we're out in Chupadera Draw. This is the draw with the grass here. We're looking across the drainage. And then there's an old, very old gravel ridge where the sage here is, and then the site, the archaeological site of Mockingbird Gap, is on the landscape from that ridge running backwards, but not out here in the floor of the draw. Now, it's an interesting situation. Here's the draw, and here's the landscape where the archaeology is. One thing I should mention, during the occupation here, the floor of the draw was 10 meters below that grass-covered surface I showed you. The 12,000, 13,000-year-old landscape was 30 feet deeper than what I showed you in that last slide in that draw, so it was quite a bit of relief there, and probably explains why there's an amazingly dense cluster of artifacts that are a little bit older than the ones I just showed you. They're referred to as Clovis artifacts, and they're in the 13,000-year range, just a little older than Folsom. And there are several hundred Clovis points and thousands of other stone tools on the surface here. People probably taking advantage of a wetland that was in the bottom of that draw. It's quite an unusual site for the high concentration of artifacts. What we see here is not that dissimilar from what we saw in the West Mesa. Locally, Holocene sands, sometime with a little bit of soil development. The Clovis occupation surface is on top of a BTK soil profile. We don't have dates here, but the soil morphology is telling us that it's quite similar to what we saw on the West Mesa. An old, stabilized landscape in Aeolian sands and some alluvium adjacent to that active drainage way. We're out in the distal end of some alluvial fans, but a stable part of the alluvial fans. People are living on that stabilized surface, take advantage of the resources in the draw. But again, the soil morphology, the geomorphology, is telling us why so much of this stuff is at the surface. It's only buried locally where there's some Holocene sand. Otherwise, the artifacts are all over the place, and that's why we know that the site is there. Quick trip down to Las Cruces. Don't have to tell you too much about the Las Cruces area. We already heard about it from John, our pals, John and Lee. Did so much work there. The alluvial fan landscape, Piedmont landscape, where John and Lee spent so much of their careers in front of the Oregon Mountains. We don't have an archaeological story there. I'm sure there is one. The point is that you see, again, a similar story. You have these old fan surfaces, stabilized surfaces with well-developed soils. We can use the soils now, based on all the research that's been done, we can use the soils to give us rough age estimates of the landscape. If you find archaeology on the surface here, you know that you have a palimpsest, that all the human occupation is going to be mixed together on this surface because the landscape itself is quite a bit older than the earliest human occupation. Again, the Picacho alluvium in this particular case, 25,000 years and older, you're not going to find, or at least as far as we know, you're not going to find archaeology in that. It's going to be on it. But again, people could be taking advantage of this stable surface as they make use of the resources of the Rio Grande. But this is not a surprising pattern for those of you who've spent any time in the basin and range. Now, we're going to go on down and finish up where we've been doing some recent work at a remote archaeological site in northern Sonora called El Fin del Mundo, the end of the world. The name was given to the crew that found the site once they finally got there. It's 3 hours from the nearest pavement, and you really think you're in the end of the world. So we have excavations here in this little island, and then more archaeology, this so-called Clovis camp. I'll zip through this. We have buried archaeology for a change. This surface here that the crew is excavating is buried under lake beds, similar to what we see at the Lubbock Lake site. They're peeling off lake beds from a bone bed. And in this cross-section, they're working right here. It's a Clovis kill, elephant kill. You can see some of the bones showing up here. Diatomite burying the bone bed right there, diatomaceous earth on top of it. It's about 13,000 years old. They're slowly peeling away those lake beds. Clovis artifacts, just for BL's sake, these are clear crystal Clovis points. You can see right through them when you hold them up. They're spectacular artifacts. Coming out from around this little island where that bone bed is, this little pork chop, I call it. Unusual site, instead of the normal mastodon or mammoth, we have a critter called a gomphotheria, which is a Central and South American relative of the mammoth. It's the first archaeological gonfiteria that's ever been found in North America, so we're quite excited about that. But let's go on to the soil story. Moving away from that little island where we're excavating, you run into a big red soil. We call it Big Red. Locally buried by, I think it's lacustrine carbonate. And as you move farther away, you get into an area where Big Red is not buried. It's been around for at least 36,000 years. We have some dates on Sassanid shell. This is the surface of Big Red. Again, we've got an old, stable landscape. People are occupying this surface, more Clovis archaeology, camping debris. So we've got Clovis people on the stable uplands away from where the lake was. They're taking advantage of the lake for killing and processing animals, but camping, spending most of their time, these are the sort of tools you'd find in a camping situation. You have these basal fragments where the tips have been broken off. They come back, bring the artifacts or the spears back to the site, remove the tips, or put new tips on them. Here you've seen a broken base with a new tip. Same thing here. And I'll close by saying that when I was out here, first got to this site and saw this big red soil, I kept thinking, you know, I wonder if that's the regional stable landscape. And that's where the people were living. And I have to say, after my training with BL and Pete Berkland and 25 years of experience, I turned out to be right. And it's probably the only time I'll ever get to say that in public. It's exactly where people were spending most of their time when they weren't down in the kills. They were taking advantage of these stable surfaces adjacent to, in this case, a small lake along the Rio Grande, adjacent to the Rio itself or the small playas. And this is a pattern we're seeing over and over. The kill sites, the places where we find the stratified buried archaeology are pretty localized. Most of the landscape are these stable, you have these stable surfaces that you can recognize by the soils. So thanks very much, BL, for a lot of years of Mexican food and barbecue and a few cigars along the way, and we appreciate it. Thank you.